This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. On Monday, 22,000 people descended on Richmond, Virginia to protest strong gun control bills making their way through the state's legislature. Lobby Day is an annual event in Virginia where all kinds of groups lobby for their interests. But this year, it turned into a massive rally focused on the Second Amendment. The Guardian's Lois Beckett wrote how the story of the demonstration on MLK Day began in the fall with Election Day in Virginia. It was a momentous one.
So a traditionally red state had now gone blue, and Democrats were excited to make the most of that.
Democrats had enough numbers on the committee to advance four bills to the full Senate.
Democrats had a slate of gun control policies that they wanted to implement.
One restores Virginia's one handgun a month law. Another expands background checks. A version of a red flag law passed, and a bill allowing local governments to ban guns in certain public places passed as well.
The assault weapons ban was most controversial because an early draft of the bill suggested it would be a ban on the possession of military-style guns, which raised the question of what would happen to citizens who already owned them.
So this legislative program was not a secret to anybody, but it was, I gather, treated as the first stage of tyranny. What was the rhetoric? What did the social media traffic have to say on the ascension of the Democrats?
So one thing that happened right after the election is that Governor Ralph Northam was asked if the assault weapon ban he supported would involve confiscation of firearms that Virginians already owned. And Northam said that he couldn't answer that question right away, that he would have to talk to his advisor and sort of get back on that. The day after, in a different interview, he was like, no, this is not a ban with confiscation. But it was too late by that point. And that tiny little bit of suggestion that this fear might be realistic was enough really to fuel tremendous anxiety and anger among gun owners in Virginia. And the concerning rhetoric wasn't just about guns or confiscation. There was this also this strain of discussion which suggested that Democrats hadn't really won the election, or they hadn't won the election of real Virginians, that the people in Northern Virginia, the Democrats who had pushed the state blue, didn't really count, weren't real Virginians. And sometimes that rhetoric was explicitly about immigration. I heard somebody the night before Lobby Day saying that gun rights would not be preserved unless immigration was changed. And then another gun rights advocate pushing back and say, don't talk about that. We're just talking about the Second Amendment. I don't want to get into immigration today.
And then there were the Jews. The Jews!
It's true that Michael Bloomberg, the former New York City mayor who's now running for president, also funds the largest gun control group in the United States. And that group poured a lot of money into Virginia's local elections with the goal of passing gun violence prevention laws. But there's been a lot of focus in gun rights about the billionaires like Michael Bloomberg coming in. And that is very close to and sometimes identical to an anti-Semitic trope, the idea that someone who is Jewish is working behind the scenes to steal the election from the real people. That's very concerning, too.
So there was an organization that seemed to have been particularly at the heart of Lobby Day and this convergence of gun owners, not only from Virginia, but around the country. Who are they?
So the Virginia Citizens Defense League is a longtime gun rights-focused organization in Virginia, led by Philip Van Cleef, who has gone to defend gun rights very uncompromisingly in big media interviews.
You can't argue with Philip.
On the Jon Stewart Show.
Well, let me put it to you this way. There are more drownings in backyards where they have pools. If they don't have a pool, there are no drownings in backyards, okay? So the U.S. has a very high number of guns. Therefore, there is going to be more chances for somebody to be killed with a gun.
Right.
He got pranked by Sacha Baron Cohen to sort of defending children's ability to have guns.
To get deadly weapons into the hands of America's school children, I needed the help of gun rights hero Philip Van Cleef.
But it's true that this is a gun rights group that pretty much opposes all gun control laws, sees themselves as very uncompromising on the Second Amendment, and has views that lots of Americans would not share when it comes to what gun laws they support or don't support.
There was talk about literal insurrection. If they come to take our guns, be careful. It could be the start of something very, very frightening.
After November's election, gun rights advocates started showing up at local government meetings across the state.
We are not extremists. We are citizens who believe in the Second Amendment as well as the rest of the Constitution.
Talking angrily about these proposed gun bills that Democrats wanted to pass.
That we could have guns to protect ourselves from the very government officials who are trying to take our guns away from us.
And you can see that the words like tyranny and treason are popping up. And in talking to Philip Van Cleef, the head of the Virginia Citizens Defense League, he said he had been hearing talk about civil war, too. And it wasn't, he said, people who were excited about engaging in a civil war. It was people who were anxious and nervous and said, listen, if people are actually trying to confiscate guns that Virginians already own, like that could lead to insurrection. That could lead to war, because this is the foundational principle of gun rights in America. Like, from my cold, dead hands, come and take it. Then the news of this very powerful grassroots movement in Virginia pushing back against Democrats trying to pass gun control laws really resonated. And so people were also talking about civil war, and they were using a different term, boogaloo, which is this semi-ironic online term for civil war, and talking about, like, does the boogaloo begin in Virginia?
And what's the reference to?
The reference is to a really bad, like, dance movie.
Electric boogaloo, the ultimate show.
That involved the term boogaloo that turned into the meme, like, Civil War II Electric Boogaloo.
This time there is an enemy, so they must unite, because to say what you believe in, sometimes you must fight.
And there is an acknowledgement in this term for civil war that, like, Civil War Part II might be, like, a really bad sequel that nobody really wants to see. But it also is being used quite sincerely by white supremacist accelerationists, people who want there to be a civil war so society breaks down and they can form a white ethnostate.
At some point, it was beginning, I guess, to resemble what happened a couple years earlier in Charlottesville, a day of protest that ended in violence.
The real anxiety around this probably peaked on Wednesday of last week, where when Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam declared a state of emergency.
After learning armed militias and hate groups plan to join the protest.
We have received credible intelligence from our law enforcement agencies that there are groups with malicious plans.
And suggested that what had been a local event was really being co-opted by some extremists. We don't know exactly what that law enforcement intelligence was, but we do know that on Saturday, even a House Republican leader, after getting a private security briefing for lawmakers, came out with a statement condemning hate groups and saying that the Republicans would stand with Democrats against disorder. We also know that
police arrested three more members of a violent white supremacist group in Georgia on Friday after making similar arrests in Maryland and Delaware.
Three members of an alleged neo-Nazi group, The Base, were reportedly discussing going with firearms to this Richmond event and opening fire with the intent of causing chaos. And law enforcement then went on to arrest four more people allegedly connected with this neo-Nazi group. All of this happening as everyone is getting ready to head to this protest and everyone is on edge.
Lois was in the middle of the rally on Monday. We also sent our producer, Micah Loewinger, down to Richmond. Hey, Micah.
Hi, Bob.
You spent a few hours not at the state capitol building, but sort of in the belly of the beast.
I wanted to experience this event through the eyes and ears of the militias who are on the ground.
Whose eyes and ears, exactly?
A guy named AJ Andrews, a militiaman, who I met on the internet while I was trying to make sense of how the far right was organizing for the rally. He's a former federal security employee, and now he spends most of his time, from what I can tell, talking with other militias online. He was invited to participate in Richmond as a quote-unquote peacekeeper by the organizers of the event, the Virginia Citizens Defense League. He drove down south in his RV from his home in western New York. It's a faded blue and white RV with all the comforts of home, but he calls it his mobile command center because it's incredibly decked out.
450 watts of solar on the roof goes down to 690 amp hour battery into a 6,000 watt pure sine wave inverter to give me full power sitting here in the camper.
A satellite setup so that he can broadcast Wi-Fi to other militias that want to come and hang out.
20 USB hookups, a CB with a built-in police scanner to it. I've got ham radio that becomes a mobile repeater.
Enough food for 6 months.
Full medical in here. I've got security in here if I need to pull it out of the cupboard.
He is preparing for the apocalypse, or as he would put it, for SHTF, which stands for when hits the fan.
I've got a team of folks from all over the country watching different cameras, this, that, and the other, and I'm in contact with them all the time.
He met up with his militia here. Most of his guys, I only saw 5 or 6 of them, but I heard that there were more, were headed down to the rally. But he's set back in the parking lot watching a Breitbart live stream.
That's how the media works. The media is the greatest threat to American freedom.
And simultaneously monitoring his own men. He's not just the eyes and ears of his operation, he's the commander. And if he so chooses, if he thinks there's a credible threat against his guys...
I make a call. I got everybody from 20 miles to 100 miles ready to be here in a second.
And who are these guys? I mean, are they activists? Are they insurrectionists? Survivalists? Are they live-action role players just playing army? What's the profile?
He identifies as a 3%er, and the 3%ers are a primary force in the American militia movement. That name, 3%, refers to a myth, a disputed historical statistic about the Revolutionary War.
3% of the first 13 colonies fought for, died for, and bled for our Constitution. Then they helped write that Constitution, put it into play for everybody to have their rights and their freedoms in this country. Britain wanted to take our rights away, just like a lot of Democrats and liberals and a lot of socialists want to take the rights now and trade everybody's rights for just their freedoms. And just like you're seeing on Breitbart, if people are watching the live feeds on that, they're saying they're sick of their rights being trampled on.
The idea that we're actually ready to fight tyrants for our rights.
This is the rhetoric Lois Beckett told us about, that we've heard from some of the most violent corners of the far right, from anti-government terrorists, including the Oklahoma City bombers, Klansmen. I mean, locked and loaded is one thing, but that's different from itching to open fire and start helter-skelter. Are they itching to do that?
AJ told me that some of the more hardcore members of the 3%ers have trained for urban and all kinds of warfare. One of AJ's social media profiles that I found shows him wearing a Confederate flag hat. And 3%ers and their ties to Islamophobic and white supremacist activity have been featured in the press over the past few years.
We saw the first participants in today's Unite the Right rally arrive, about 40 men and women in camouflage gear, some with militia markings. Virginia is an open carry state.
There were a few of them that were recruited by the white supremacists at the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, protecting the white supremacists from the counter-protesters. The Oregon Bundy standoff from 2016, some of those guys were 3%ers.
Armed protesters have taken over a federal wildlife refuge, determined to stay as long as it takes, and prepared to use violence.
This is the group who objected to federal grazing regulations with federal agents trying to enforce the law.
Yeah, and then there were 3 militiamen connected to a local 3% group.
Authorities say the 3 suspects are part of a Kansas militia group that calls itself the Crusaders,
who were convicted of plotting to bomb a mosque in Garden City, Kansas, which is part of the reason why AJ is here leading this operation in Richmond on Lobby Day, because he wants to rehabilitate the image of 3%ers and also of the militia movement.
There's nothing wrong with the name militia. If you carry a 3% sticker, oh, you got to be a racist. You got to be a nationalist. You got to be... No, we're not. We're human. We're American. There's nothing racist about us.
I got the sense that he feels victimized by the label racist, but he doesn't seem to acknowledge that his movement, his militia, has this history of dangerous white supremacist, Islamophobic, and anti-government acts.
We're trying to show everybody that we are adults. We're responsible adults. Where Northam's trying to say, oh, the guns shoot people. No, it's the trigger that pulls it by the person. It's not the gun.
So we're sitting here in the camper, and he's waiting for something to happen. Maybe it's going to boil over. Maybe the counter-protesters are going to show up, and someone's going to throw a punch, or someone's going to pull a trigger.
There's a few people that are ready to get stupid. It could be an extremist that's sick of the BS that the left's trying to put on us. You got your Nazis. You got your new Black Panthers. You got your Black Lives Matter. You got your Antifa. You got some Muslims that are against the Constitution.
He just got done disclaiming racism, but that's the old Sharia law trope with nothing behind it. Not to mention equating Nazis with counter-protesters from the left.
That's right. It's a false equivalency. But what he's thinking about right now is media optics. He thinks that if the armed men at this event end up shooting people, it's going to make him and his ilk look bad. So he and the organizers of the event, the Virginia Citizens Defense League, are very purposefully telling the militias, act professionally, keep your cool, do not lose it.
I've been telling everybody, you got four cheeks that God gave you for a reason. Use all four of them before you go and do something. Lord always said, if you get slapped in one cheek, turn the other.
But if he gets wind that one of his guys is starting the ruckus,
I'm not going to turn four cheeks when somebody on my side of the fence is getting stupid. I'm going to give you two chances of me talking to you calmly. Then I'm going to knock you out and have two people drag you away from everybody so, number one, you don't get trampled on. And number two, you need to take the cameras off of you before we start looking bad.
So the zealous side of him, the 3% side of him, the SHTF side of him, is prepared for an all-out bloodbath in the capital of Virginia. But the PR side of him is worried about the optics of being blamed for violence?
The whole time that I'm interviewing him and we're watching the Breitbart live stream, he also has his earbuds in and he's listening to his militiamen chatting away on an app called Zello.
It's a phone app, but it works like a walkie-talkie, right?
That's right. It's like if you took WhatsApp, which is like for groups and text chat, and you just prioritized the walkie-talkie function. That's what it sounds like.
Turning point in our country right here.
This is it, man. This governor we got?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Worst person in the world.
Everybody's on a channel on Zello, on phones, on comms, working with each other, and it's one giant network. Every single person with boots on ground is in the network together.
About how many people are in your Zello group?
Close to 1,000 right now. And they're involved with their own little groups, and it networks out from there, kind of like a spidered out pyramid.
AJ kicked me out of his Zello group a couple weeks before Richmond when we first started talking, so I wasn't ever able to listen in on him and his friends, which I think reveals something important. He's down to talk to me. He's giving me this access, but he does not want me to know what he and his militia are really thinking and planning.
Or just the kind of rhetoric that goes back and forth when they think nobody's listening.
Yeah, so I signed up for a bunch of Zello groups while I was in Richmond and had those recording throughout the day just so I could understand the kind of intel that was bouncing between militiamen, activists all around Richmond.
Is everybody at the rally already or are they on their way?
On the ground.
We're still en route.
And at home.
Yeah, from what I'm watching online, there's a lot of people there.
This is not a time to go in there and be congenial and polite. It's time to go in there and kick their asses. If the state troopers get in your way, so be it. Complete the mission. Their world up.
So AJ claims that he's on the lookout for this kind of rhetoric. He told me that he will pull these kinds of guys out of the chat room, bring them into a separate Zello chat room where he and other militia leaders will try to talk these people down or kick them out of the crew altogether. Right now, he's sifting through a ton of Zello chatter.
Somebody just tried jamming him.
I heard him responding to people who were saying stuff like, is someone jamming our radio?
What did I just say?
Does anyone have any intel on drones?
Yeah, copy that. They got Drones being controlled by folks sitting in helicopters about a little more than 2,000 feet up.
And why is there a sniper in the tower?
Tyrants showing their face are sitting on top of the roofs with sniper rifles.
Militarized sniper sitting in the bell tower. I saw part of a barrel sticking off, and you saw part of a head, but I didn't see what kind of uniform the officer was wearing.
Did I just hear that? Was that on yours?
Hang on. Okay, that's it. That's just at the fence. They're not taking guns from anybody. Exactly. Chat trolls being stupid. More false information, false flag bullshit. And this is what we do. We find the bullshit. We knock it out.
So is he sort of truth squatting? Nipping paranoia in the bud?
Yes and no. Yes, he was able to call out something that might be a provocation for somebody to start a fight, like the gun confiscation thing. But no, because he's fact-checking against his version of reality in a world that includes all kinds of conspiracy theories, blatant lies. Like this idea that was sort of percolating online before the event that Antifa or other leftist agitators had hired crisis actors to play as militiamen or patriots and start a funk from the inside.
There's a lot going on that your eye and ear witness to. Was there a single moment that struck you as the most revealing, most poignant, most frightening, most anything?
While I was sitting with AJ in this parking lot, there were some of his fellow 3%ers in their own cars getting suited up. Full camo, military-grade helmets, bulletproof vests, long guns slung from their backs. And before the event, he told me that he didn't want his guys carrying those guns because he didn't want a hot-headed dude losing his cool, firing a single bullet, and starting the bloodbath. But we're sitting in his RV, and we're just watching his buddies get ready, and he didn't say a word about what they were doing. And it made me question the veracity of some of these precautions and de-escalation techniques that he had told me about. While we were having our conversation, one of the wives of the militiamen came over, knocked on the door, and AJ got out to speak with her. And when he came back in, I asked what their conversation had been about, and he said,
"Just one of my buddy's wives. She was concerned about him being downtown."
I noticed that when a bunch of the men left, some of the wives stayed back. Is that pretty common?
Yep.
Is your wife at home really worried about you too?
Oh yeah. But she knows there's some things you just got to do.
He said, "She's at home caring for our son who suffers from a developmental disease and needs constant care. And she is worried for me."
She just asked me not to. She's scared. I just tell her, I said, "This ain't my first rodeo. I've always come back home. If God says it's my time to go, it's my time to go. I've been shot, stabbed, burned, born with cancer, diagnosed at 4, still got it throughout my body, and nothing's in my organs. I got my sight when I was 1, got hearing when I was 3, and I shouldn't have been born. So, if I'm alive, and there's still a reason, so I'm still going to do something. There's certain things you got to step up for. People in America got to step up for the rights and the freedoms to keep it alive for the next generation. Because without that, we ain't got shit."
So even if it's murky what the actual cause is, he's prepared to die for it.
Yeah, he is. And I just want to say one more thing. No one was hurt on Monday. No bullets were fired. But spending time with AJ really freaked me out. He and his guys want it both ways. They're ready to go to war, and they have a history of participating in violent and racist acts. But at the same time, they want to be seen as a normal part of American life, patriotic American life.
OTM producer Michael Loewinger. So the protest went off without casualties. Charlottesville, it was not. I asked Guardian reporter Lois Beckett to reflect on what it all meant.
I think one of the biggest takeaways from Monday is that law enforcement behavior is so crucial to whether a protest becomes violent or not, to whether a gathering is seen as peaceful or complete chaos. if law enforcement had shown up in a different way, had escalated tensions, perhaps if law enforcement had actually enforced the Virginia law against masking and arrested a bunch of extremists in masks, it might have escalated tensions. But by stepping back and giving protesters the space to do what they wanted peacefully, everything stayed calm. And in some ways, that's good. That's a lesson learned from Charlottesville, where failures of law enforcement were very essential in the violence that ended up taking place. But in some ways, that's also quite concerning to many viewers who saw a real distinction between how white, right-wing, pro-gun protesters were treated versus unarmed, left-wing protesters of color. And that reflects the broader tensions in the gun debate, which is caught up with policing, criminal justice, caught up with broader racial tensions in the United States.
The various organizers of Lobby Day have been crowing on social media and in press interviews that you see we're not crazies. We managed to have a very large, some say 22,000 protesters, marching in support of gun rights and against the Virginia government without any violence. So the fears of the left are completely unfounded.
Griff Jenkins was at the rally yesterday. We heard it could be very troublesome. He joins us from Richmond this morning. And Griff, not so bad.
No trouble whatsoever, Steve. Ainsley Peake.
But on the other hand, hold on. It is 22,000 people, some large percentage of them carrying guns, including long guns, including styling themselves in these militia outfits. I'd argue that that is itself an act of violence, and if not violence, intimidation. Is it fair for them to claim victory because the mayhem did not take place?
You've hit on exactly the debate. Is it fair to call this rally peaceful? Gun rights activists would say, absolutely. And it's true that nobody got hurt. And it's true that the feeling at the rally was quite calm and quite relaxed. But it's also true that there were a lot of other Virginia citizens who had events or protests planned for Lobby Day who canceled them because they were too concerned about the security situation of so many people showing up armed who were concerned about the threats of extremism. Two of the protesters I saw at the rally were wearing these red T-shirts that said, "Make politicians afraid again," with a big rifle underneath. And that was certainly one of the deliberate messages of what happened on Monday.
Based on a false narrative of onerous confiscatory gun legislation, 22,000 people met bearing arms and in protest to the elected government. And for that to happen, an infrastructure was built. And that infrastructure brings in people who are not merely gun rights activists, but right-wingers of every stripe, including those who espouse violence. And I wonder if this will inevitably lead to exploiting those networks for a subsequent show of force that is just not so peaceful.
Bob, I have to say, I really disagree with you there. I think what the rally in Virginia showed was not something fundamentally new, but showed what has been the case for decades. One of the things that drives me crazy about the gun debate in America is when folks on the left suggest that the gun rights movement is all about the NRA and all about the gun lobby and all about money, and it's not really a grassroots movement. And what we saw in Virginia is that's false. There are thousands of Americans who are very willing to show up in person, even to an event where there were a lot of legitimate fears that it could turn violent, to make it clear that they do not support gun laws. What I also saw on Monday was a really disciplined attempt to keep the event truly focused narrowly on guns, not on overt white supremacy, not on immigration, not on a host of other right-wing issues that could have been glommed on, but just to say this is just focused on gun laws. And there were several really interesting moments when speakers would tell the crowd, "It is so great to see Americans of all races and colors and backgrounds here. That's what gun rights is about." And that was strange because there really was an overwhelmingly white crowd. There were very, very few people of color here. But there was a nominal acknowledgement that some people wanted to believe that this was a multiracial movement, wanted to assert that this was not a white identity movement, that this was an issue of civil rights that applied to all Americans.
Lois, thank you so much.
Thanks, Bob.
Lois Beckett is a senior reporter for The Guardian, covering gun policy, criminal justice, and the far right. Coming up, are Puerto Rico's travails self-inflicted or the inevitability of colonial subjugation? This is On the Media.